This morning I want to continue to look at some of the differences we've been exploring between the various generations and the impact that that's had on especially our younger generations, Gen Z and Gen Alpha, who are in school and just becoming young adults today. And we've been trying to do this from the perspective of recognizing as the older generations, it is our responsibility to try to communicate effectively with those who are younger than us. And admittedly, that is not always an easy task to accomplish. But it is especially important, not just as we're trying to communicate and understand one another on a day-to-day basis, but especially it's vitally important when it comes to us, the older, trying to pass the faith down to the next generation so that they can understand and appreciate the value and the importance of being in a relationship with God and serving Him with their lives. In this study, we've previously looked at the difficulties that our young people are facing in growing up in a post-Christian culture, as well as the challenges that have been presented to them growing up, some of them never knowing a time before the digital world, this virtual world. Especially, we looked last week at the effects that all of us really need to be aware of social media and the negative effects that it can have in our lives and our attitudes, even those of us who are older who are trying to walk with the Lord, that we don't allow ourselves to be drugged down by some of the negative influences, even in that area of our lives, that we can still walk the Christian walk even in the digital world. Today, I want to round out this series that we're calling Bridging the Gap by looking at one more aspect of our society's perspective on and expectations of young people. It's the soft bigotry of low expectations. And I want to look at how we can't explore some ways to overcome that in our discussion today, especially as it pertains to the expectations that we as a society have for our young people. Now, I need to make a couple disclaimers here at the beginning of this lesson, and I need to admit right off the bat that I'm going to be painting with some very broad strokes this morning in the commentary that I make. And so understand that the accusations that I level against our society at large are not necessarily true of every single individual. There are exceptions to the rule, but I'm speaking and commenting on wide swaths of our society today, especially here in America. So I'm going to be speaking in generalities this morning. So even if it is not true of you or your situation or your kids or your family, understand that what I'm going to present today is how a lot, maybe even the majority of young people are thought of in our culture today. I also want to say this right off the bat, that this lesson is going to be as much an indictment of the adults, the parents of our society today, as it is a call to the younger generations to be different from what you are expected to be by our culture and our society. And so really today, more than any other lesson in this series, I am trying to talk both to the older generations and also to you who are in the younger generations as well. And so as I am calling upon the younger generations to rise above the status quo, I'm going to be seeking to give the older ones of us some strategies, some concrete ways in which we can encourage them and help them to reach that goal of a higher standard. And I understand this too, young people, that when I say something negative about the state of the younger generations, I want you to understand that I do not personally blame any of you for the state of things. In fact, if I'm blaming anybody, I would lay the blame squarely at the feet of the older generations, your parents. So I'm going to say some negative things today about young people. But understand, young people, I'm not accusing you or even blaming you. I'm blaming us who are older. And I'm calling upon all of us to rise to a higher standard. I heard here recently that a story is better than theological argumentation, presentation of things, that sticks with people much longer. So let me begin with a story. The story of the elephant rope. Asian elephants are pretty big. Not as big as their African cousins, but they're still pretty big nonetheless. They can grow up to 10 feet tall at their shoulders and weigh just under 4 tons. They're very strong. They're very powerful creatures. And yet, at the same time, for all their strength and power, they are very trainable. They are used even today in East Asia to perform manual labor, especially in the logging industry, where they can go into forests and gather up felled trees and things like that. And it's much better on the ecology of the area. And so they're used very heavily even in that industry today. But historically, they've been used for anything from moving stuff around to being beasts of burden in war. They're big, powerful, strong animals. And yet, what is interesting is that they are often tethered and restrained, especially at night, by a very small cord or rope that's wrapped around one ankle and just tied to a little stake that's driven maybe 6 to 12 inches into the ground. And you think, how could that be possible? Why doesn't he just rip it out of the ground and go where he wants to go? Well, the story of the elephant rope goes like this. That when elephants are born and very young, they take their foot and they wrap a heavy chain around it and tie that chain securely to a post or a wall or something large that the elephant is not big enough to move. And as it's young and it's struggling against its restraint, it begins to hurt itself a little bit. And after a while, it gets to the realization that I can't break free from this restraint. And so it just gives up trying. And then once it's learned that lesson, once it's been broken, that chain is replaced by a rope. And then that wall or the heavy rock or boulder that it's tied to is ultimately replaced by a little stake in the ground. And so then whenever this full-grown elephant then is tethered up by this little rope, as soon as it moves and begins to feel a little bit of resistance, it says, I can't break free. And doesn't even try. Now, as I did some research on that, that story may not actually be true. But if it is, even if it's not, it does make for a good story. And I think it illustrates a good point and provides an understandable parallel, especially to teenagers of today. But what is a teenager anyway? You know, it used to be traditionally throughout much of the course of human history that there were just two social categorizations that were made in relationship to one's age. You were either an adult or you were a child. Now, what's interesting to me is that Scripture seems to support that idea. Notice in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 11, there the Apostle Paul makes this observation. He says, when I was a child, I used to speak like a child, think like a child, reason like a child. When I became a man, I did away with childish things. Notice what he didn't say. He didn't say, when I was a child, I used to speak like a child and think like a child and reason like a child. And then I became a teenager. And I looked like an adult, but I still thought like a child. And then one day I finally became an adult and I put away all the childish things. That's not what he says. He says he used to be a child, and then when he became a man, he put away childish things. There's only two categories. And that's the way it's been throughout much of human history. For most of human history, when an individual reached the physical maturity to do adult things, for men it was, are you big enough and strong enough to go and work out in the field or in the mine or at some trade? When you were big enough to do that on your own, then guess what? You were a man. For women, a lot of times it was, were you physically mature enough to bear children? When you reached that age, you were a woman. Anything prior to that time, though, you would have been considered a child. I don't know exactly when that shift happened throughout the world, but in America, in the early 20th century, things began to change. With the establishment of child labor laws and mandatory education requirements that were brought about in the early 20th century here in America, we added a new category related to age. there's now this weird, awkward, in-between stage in life where you sometimes might be big enough to do adult things, but you are told that you are not old enough yet to be an adult. You are a teenager. You're an adolescent. You're a youth. You're a juvenile, or some other word that we might use to describe that awkward age group. And I'm afraid that with that change in the way we thought about younger people, we've inadvertently transformed our younger people into something that is not even what they would desire to be in their hearts. Our young people have gone from being vital contributors to the family and community and society to being dependent upon the same. Young people now, instead of contributing to the world around them through working hard and making an impact, teenagers have become, almost by default, and understand this, young people, it's not any fault of your own. It's the box we've put you in. You become habitual consumers of the world around you. And it's not because the young people are incapable of doing more, but it's because we've conditioned them to think that way about themselves. They are the elephant, and we have tied a rope around their leg. Think about it. When you think of teenagers, what do you think of? People between the age of 13 and 19, right? Teens. We typically characterize teenagers in maybe a positive light. At best, they're young. They're inexperienced. They're somewhat naive and immature. But sometimes, let's be honest, we characterize teenagers a lot more negatively than that. They're rebellious. They're irresponsible. They're hard-headed. They're untrustworthy, unreliable. Either way, they aren't expected to be able to really handle life. I would suggest to you that, in short, one of the major problems that our young people are facing today is that as a society, we have significantly lowered the expectations of our young people. And in doing so, we have actually hindered their growth and progress and hobbled the potential of what our young people can do and can be and can achieve and can accomplish today. And I would suggest to you that this has been exacerbated by the transformation over the generations in the parenting styles that have been implemented by various families. The old school way of parenting, we've all used even this terminology. In the old school, you listened to what your mom and dad said, and they demanded obedience. They expected you to do exactly as you were instructed to do. Now, certainly that parenting style, where the parents make all the rules, sometimes it's called tiger parenting, sometimes it's called authoritarian parenting. Parents make all the rules and all the decisions, and the child's responsibility is to do exactly what mom and dad say to do. Now, that certainly does promote discipline and the necessity to comply with authority, but that old school style doesn't leave much room for personal growth and development. It's hard for a young person to develop personal responsibility if they're never allowed the opportunity to be responsible for anything. They just do what they're told to do. They have difficulty with problem solving and critical thinking because I don't have to do that. I just do what I'm told to do. And oftentimes they struggle then with dealing with difficult situations where they don't have somebody that they can turn to and say, what do I do here? Which is why children of authoritarians make for very good and well-behaved robots who will do exactly what they're programmed to do, but oftentimes they turn out to be poorly and ill-developed personal individual beings. Now, I think in response to the old school way, we saw the pendulum swing too far in the other direction and we went free range. Under this parenting style, there are almost no rules or restrictions. You go where you want, when you want, how you want, and just come home at night. And certainly that style promotes self-reliance and ingenuity and the necessity of being responsible for yourself. And maybe even culture's ideas like being a self-motivator or a self-starter. Because nobody's telling you what you have to do. The problem is, even though children of free-range parents are given the opportunity to exercise personal responsibility and make their own choices, oftentimes they lack the direction or the understanding or the wisdom to make good and wise choices. And yes, they're going to face challenges, be forced to think for themselves and make their own decisions. But often, too often, because they are ill-equipped, they do those things ineffectively. We might call the kids of free-range parents those who graduated from the school of hard knocks. They learn things the hard way, the difficult way. And unfortunately, sometimes those individuals can end up carrying undesirable baggage with them for the rest of their lives because of the hard knocks that they went through as their parents let them figure things out all on their own. Now again, I think we saw the pendulum swing too far in the other direction after that. We have what we call helicopter parents. And these are the parents that hover over their children all the time, right? And everything that the child does is observed and seen by the parent. And nothing is ever outside of their sphere of observation. We would call these micromanagers. And at best, protective parents. I think at worst, overly protective parents. Because they micromanage every aspect and almost every decision of the child. Yeah, they let the kid make the decision, but only after corralling that in and limiting the options and narrowing it down for the child so that really the only option is the option that the parent wants them to. So no, Jimmy, you don't go climb out on the monkey bars and jump off the top. That's not safe, buddy. Let's think about that. What would be safer to do? And oftentimes, this parenting method, I think motivated to ensure the physical safety of children, has come at great cost. Children of helicopters developed unhealthy dependencies on others. They don't know how to function without somebody hovering over top of them, telling them what to do and giving them advice and instruction. And if it's not their parents when they grow up, it's going to turn into their wife or their husband or some other person who's bigger than them. And they're constantly going to be looking for approval and direction and insight from somebody else because they don't know how to function without somebody hovering close by. They oftentimes lack the ability to think for themselves and certainly to take personal responsibility for themselves. But I'll tell you, the newest phenomena that we're seeing now, it's not so much a swinging the pendulum again in the opposite direction as it is amplifying the helicopter parenting. And that's what's been coined as lawnmower parenting. If you haven't heard of that yet, the idea is that the parent, instead of just hovering over their child and overlooking every decision and every action that they take to make sure that things turn out well, it's that they actually go on ahead of their kids, mowing down every obstacle that could ever arise in their path. And so you don't have to talk to your teacher when you're having a problem at school. I'll talk to them for you. That bully is picking on you. I'll deal with that. Right? This is the whole mindset that's led to things like everybody's a winner and everybody gets an award and everybody is successful because we can't let our kids face any kind of adversity or any obstacle or any hardship. And so children of lawnmowers don't know how to handle adversity. They've never been confronted by any challenges in their life. They've never been told no. Because their path has always been clearly laid out for them. The real danger of this is that they don't know what it's like to fail. They don't know what it's like to feel rejection. They don't know what it's like to lose at anything. And we wonder why then when those kinds of young people go out into the world, even at a young age, at school or things like that, and somebody stands up and says, "No, Johnny, don't do that."
the kids come unglued.
In a world where everything is given to you on a silver platter, I think it promotes a sense of self-entitlement. This is why I'm afraid so many young people today just go around feeling like everything ought to be handed to them on a silver platter, and everything ought to come easily to them, and it ought never to be a challenge or a hardship, and if it is, then the world is just so unfair. And again, young people, that's not really your fault. We conditioned you to be that way by poor parenting. But all of these things I see in the way that our society views young people and how parents are raising their kids today, we have effectively lowered the bar of expectations so low that there is no incentive to try in anything. We can see this lowering of the bar in lots of different areas. A lack of discipline. We see that in the schools. It is disheartening as one who goes into the various schools in town here and volunteers from time to time to see the way that students, even little kids, treat the administrators and the teachers and the support staff. And there is a sense in which the kids are running the schools. They are running all over those who ought to be in charge. They throw fits in their classroom. And what happens? Well, we evacuate everybody else out of the classroom and let them throw their temper tantrum because we've got to keep everybody safe, because you can't tell the kid to knock it off. And that results in other people losing out on valuable education time. And so everybody else is effectively punished because of the bad behavior of one or two. You know, it's interesting. I was talking to some of my siblings not too long ago about the fact that I had never received an out-of-school suspension, an in-school suspension, or even an after-school detention. I found out my little brother, he got a day of in-school suspension for having an unexcused absence to go take his senior pictures, because that was the only time my mom could get them scheduled, was during school hours. And so when he came back, they said, well, you got an ISS because you have an unexcused absence. It wasn't for health reasons. So he had to spend a whole day in suspension in school. Man, that's pretty intense, right? Today, kids can get into fights. They can throw tantrums. They can do all sorts of crazy things, threaten other people with weapons, and nothing. There's a lack of discipline. And I've often said that the schools are not supposed to be the ones who train children how to behave. That really, a lot of times what ends up happening is schools are trying to solve a home problem, and it's not they're not capable of doing that, because really this disciplinary stuff starts in the home. And I am surprised at how much kids are allowed to get away with in their homes these days, and I'm speaking about even my own kids. Some of the stuff that I let my kids get away with, I would have had my head knocked off my shoulders for. I was raised a little bit under that old school style. I would suggest to us as parents that we've got to be more consistent. This is one of my biggest struggles, is actually following through on the discipline that I say I'm going to give to my kids. Too often I renege. Too often I say, you do that again, you're going to be grounded. And then they do it again. What do I not do? I don't ground them. That's my fault. That's a lack of consistency on my part. I would suggest to us as parents, if we say we're going to do something with our kids, we have to follow through. We have to resist the temptation to renege on that, on any kind of punishment that we've promised. But beyond that, parents, we need to model personal discipline in our own lives. Because if we are not personally disciplined ourselves, we cannot expect our children to have personal discipline. There's also seems to be a lack of respect for authority. And again, we can see this in wider swaths of our society. There seems to be a wide cultural attitude, negative attitude towards government or police, whether that was the chance of not my president 8 years ago, or defund the police and the calls for that, and total reform of the criminal justice system, and all of these kinds of things. There seems to be this attitude out there that if anybody in authority does something that I don't like, that doesn't please me, that rubs me the wrong way, then I have the right to just ignore them, to dismiss what they have to say. and not follow any of their instruction or guidance. And I think that that has had a trickle-down effect to the way that young people now view and interact with any authority figure in their lives, whether that's their parents or their teachers or just adults in general. I used, and again, understand this, young people. I hope you're paying attention. I'm not saying that this is your fault. But I remember when I was young, it was the expectation that I addressed every adult with sir or ma'am. And yet that's not the way that our kids talk. Now, some of that may be cultural and geographically located. When I visit the South, I'm much more apt to hear young people address their elders with terms of respect like that than we are here in the upper Midwest. And I'm not saying necessarily that we have to go through and strictly enforce that all the time, but we ought to be trying to do something to help our young people realize that people who are older than you deserve a certain amount of respect simply because they are older than you. And yet there seems to be among so many young people that I interact with on a regular basis a disdain for any authority figures. Last fall, or maybe it was last spring, a group of us went down to IMS for the band concert. So we had several kids who were playing in the band concert. And of course, there's a big crowd there in the gym, and we're sitting in the bleachers, and everybody's talking to one another and catching up with friends and all this kind of stuff. And the band teacher, the band director, bless his heart, he gets up there to the microphone and begins speaking into the microphone to introduce the band concert and welcome everybody there. And I'm telling you, he talked for at least 3 minutes going through his spiel, and nobody in the auditorium paid him any attention. Everybody just carried on with their conversations, hooping and hollering and having a good old time. And I thought to myself, he is totally unfazed by this. And it occurred to me, this is business as usual for him. He probably gets into the classroom every day and the kids are hooping and hollering and having a good old time and catching up with their buddies that they're not in other classes with. And he just starts into his lesson and eventually everybody will quiet down and start paying attention. But I'll ask you this, if that is indeed what's happening in the band room, where did those kids learn that behavior? It's from all those adults who were giving this person who was in a position of authority absolutely no time or attention.
There also seems to be a lack of personal responsibility and taking of initiative. How many of you guys clean up after yourselves all the time?
At least one man put his hand up. I was going to say, this is not something that just the young people are guilty of. Because I don't clean up after myself all the time. And again, I realize this principle. How can I expect my kids to do something that I myself am not doing?
Now, don't get me wrong. My kids will do chores around the house. But I usually always have to ask them to do the chores. Sometimes, most times, I have to tell them to do the chores. In fact, I would think that it would be somewhat miraculous if I were to come downstairs one morning and just find my kids doing the chores. There didn't seem to be this great sense of initiative on the part of young people.
How many of you parents struggle with this? Having your kids turn their assignments in on time. Like, I remember when I was in school, I was scared to death to turn in an assignment late. If I got to the night before and I didn't already have that assignment turned in, I was panicking. My son feels like it's no big deal. And I think some of that is because of the way that teachers are handling things these days. They set a deadline, but then you get 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6
more days added on after that with no deduction to your grade, which is why I respect teachers who will allow kids to turn in assignments late, but automatically it's going to be one letter grade down.
Or at best, it's going to be a C. But it's like deadlines are meaningless. The whole concept of being on time seems to be meaningless to much of our society and culture these days.
There are so many young people who don't have any ambition to get a job. Some of them don't even want to get a driver's license.
it would appear from the outside looking in that they don't care about being independent from their parents or their family. And I recognize that there are some economic things that are contributing to that problem. I mean, why go out and work really hard if at the end of the day the government takes so much out of my paycheck that I still can't even afford to go to a movie because a movie costs $50 to go there and get a popcorn these days? And that doesn't even figure in having to pay for a car and gas and insurance. And so some kids are like, you know what, I'm content to stay home and play video games at my parents' house because I can still talk to all my buddies that way. And it's cheaper. But there seems to be this lack of ambition among so many young people today. And I just can't quite figure out. Even if your reasoning, though, is it's just too expensive, it's the deck is stacked against me and all this kind of stuff, it's going to be so hard, I would suggest to you that does not give you a license to throw your hands up in the air and say, well, I'm just not going to try. And again, as parents, we ought not to enable our kids to be able to have that kind of an attitude. It's time to start raising the bar. And this is where I really want to talk to the kids. And I want you parents to think about some of the things that I'm going to say as suggestions of ways in which we can begin to raise the bar for our young people. So, if you're a young person and you have not been paying attention to me thus far in the lesson, I would beg your attention at this point now. You need to understand something, that God holds you to a higher standard than what your society holds you. The biblical perspective on young people and responsibility is that God will hold you accountable for your actions. Notice in Ecclesiastes, that's in the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes chapter 11, beginning in verse 9, the wise Solomon said, "Rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood, and follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes, yet know this, that God will bring you to judgment for all these things." You don't get to say, well, I'm just a young person, so what I do and the choices I make don't matter. They absolutely do. And God sees everything. Later on in chapter 12, in verse 13, he says, the conclusion when all has been heard is, fear God and keep His commandments. Because this applies to every person, young and old. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. Which is why if you go back to chapter 11 and verse 10, he says, in light of this reality that God will hold you accountable, remove grief and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. And so that gets to the next point, that you need to be using your time wisely, because you're not always going to have as much time as what you have right now. In fact, he'll go on in chapter 12 and talk about the idea that you need to remember also your creators in the days of your youth before the evil days come and the years draw near when you will say, I have no delight in them. He goes on here to talk very poetically about what it's like to get old. And we get to a point in our lives where we're just kind of like wore out with life. We're tired of life. And I think if you're a godly, spiritual person, that should be natural. You should get to the point where you're like, you know what, I've lived long enough, I'm ready to go home and be with you, God, and be in your presence. I've had enough of this life. But here Solomon is saying, remember your Creator in the days of your youth before you get tired of life, before you get old. Because you're not always going to have the strength, you're not always going to have the energy, you're not always going to have the free time, you're not always going to have the things that you have right now, you're not always going to have such an optimistic outlook on life as what you have right now. So use those things to your advantage. In Lamentations, verse 3, that's that really little book between Jeremiah and Ezekiel. Lamentation, verse 3, chapter 3, rather, in verse 27, here Jeremiah says, it is good for a man that he should bear the yoke in his youth. And the idea there is that it's better for people to experience maybe even some punishment from God to get them back on the right track while they're still young. Why? Does that mean you can't learn a lesson from God and turn your life over to Him when you're old? No, you can. And if you haven't done that already, even if you're one of the old people, do that. But there's no arguing the fact that if you learn that lesson when you're young, you have your whole life ahead of you to be able to devote to serving God and drawing closer to Him and preparing yourself for that eternal home with Him one day. Another thing I would say to young people is do not let your youthfulness be either a deterrent or an excuse for not doing better. Paul says to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12, let no one look down on your youthfulness, but rather in speech, conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself an example of those who believe. Young people, you have the ability to be a positive example to those around you, to walk as Christ would have you to walk, to shine your light before men that they see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. And don't ever let anybody dismiss you or your positive godly example simply because of your youth. Again, this maybe goes with the previous point a little bit, using your time wisely. But in Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 29, really just the first half of that verse, the glory of young men is their strength. Being young and being strong and having energy and time and resources and stuff like that's not a negative thing. It shouldn't be something that we use as an excuse. Well, I'm just young. I don't have to do that kind of stuff. No, you are young. Therefore, you should do that kind of stuff. Serve God with all your strength and all your might. Because one day you're going to be old and you're going to be fat and you're going to be not feeling like getting out of bed. Don't let your youth be an excuse. It's something that should empower you. It is your glory. So I would say, work hard. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 23. In all labor there is profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 11. He who tills his land will have plenty of bread, but he who pursues worthless things lacks sense. Did you catch that, young people? I know some of us, when it's time to do chores, when it's time to do work, when it's time to go in the yard, when it's time to cut the grass, you think that you have an allergy to work. It ain't going to kill you. In fact, in all labor, there is profit, there is benefit. So work hard. Whatever your task is, whatever work that you find to do, do it with all of your strength. After all, that's why we were put here on earth. Did you realize that? Yes, we are designed to be in a relationship with God, but He put us on work on earth to do work. When He created Adam and Eve, where did He put them? He put them in the garden to tend to the garden. He didn't put them there so that they could be on vacation, so that they could sit back and relax and have the angels come down and fan them with leaves and feed them grapes. He put them there to work. This is why I believe so many young people, and maybe not so young of people, find their lives so unfulfilling. It's because we're lazy. We don't know how to work hard anymore. There is fulfillment in working hard. It's what you were designed to do. I'm going to read a couple Proverbs here. And I want you to think, does this describe me? Are we paying attention? Does this describe me? Proverbs chapter 21, verse 25. The desire of the sluggard, that is the lazy person, puts him to death, for his hands refuse to work. Lazy people have a lot of desires. The only thing that they'll ever find is death. Their life will expire because they have a desire, but they're not willing to do the work, and so they never come to anything. How about this?
Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 16. The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can give a discreet answer. Do you think that you're always the smartest person in the room? Do you think that you always have the answer for everything? You know who else thinks that? The lazy person. Maybe that ought to be a clue to us. If I always think that I'm right and I always know I'm smarter than seven other people combined, if you have that attitude about yourself, maybe you ought to look at your work ethic. Maybe you're lazy and you've duped yourself into thinking you're smarter than you actually are.
You know, Paul told the Thessalonians that when we were with you, we gave you this rule that he who doesn't work shall not eat either. I ask the young people this, why is it any different for you? Why should you get a free ride? Now, I'm not saying you have to at a very young age go out and get a job and bring home money to be able to pay for groceries. But are there not things, is there not stuff and work that you can do around your house and for your family that contributes to the family and its well-being and the effective functioning of your little team? As part of the way you contribute and you work, I wonder how many of our young people would actually get up and step away from the game console if they knew, I have to do work today in the house, otherwise I'm not going to get dinner. Now that idea sounds extreme. But if that principle is true for adults, why is it not also true for those who are big enough and strong enough and capable enough to do work? It's time to raise the bar. There is value in high expectations. You realize that Jesus called us as his children to be perfect as his heavenly Father is perfect. You are to be perfect as God. That's an incredibly high standard. And Matthew chapter 5 verse 48, I've heard people try to wiggle their way out of it. Well, he doesn't really mean absolutely. No, that's what he says. He calls us to an incredibly high standard. 1 Peter chapter 1, 14 and 15. Be holy as God is holy. Jesus told his disciples, you are to love one another, John 13, as I love you. And we could go on and on and on and look at all of these times where God is held up as the standard to which we are called. Why does God call us to such a high standard? I would suggest to you, the main reason is because people have a tendency to rise to the expectations. There have been studies that have been done where people go in, teachers or college professors, and they're told this group of people, they're kind of challenged people, and they don't really expect very much out of them, but here's a gifted group of kids, and in reality, everybody has the same intellectual capacity. You know who succeeds more? The people that they were told were the special group. Because they hold them to a higher standard and expect more out of them. Whereas those who they don't expect as much out of them, well, they don't get it. They're special. You know, we'll just leave them behind. God holds us to an incredibly high standard because he wants us to try to achieve that. He wants us to excel. And let me say this in closing. I know I've gone long. Thank goodness nobody's gone back and gotten tomatoes. Understand this, young people, there are no participation trophies in the spiritual race. Paul tells the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 9, run the race in such a way that you might win. And he says in that section, it's going to require work, it's going to require effort, it's going to require discipline, and that if you give up before you cross the line, you will be disqualified. You don't get to say, well, I ran for a while, God. Can't I just get a ribbon? No. That's not how it works in the spiritual race. You have to run with endurance the race that is set before you. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1. The Hebrew writer says, let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us. Now, sometimes sin can be the encumbrance that keeps us from running the spiritual race. But let me suggest to you this, that's not limited to sin. You remember where we started the elephant in the room? Maybe the encumbrance for you young people is the low expectations of society. That's what's holding you back from saying, I can be somebody for God. I can do things. I can accomplish much because He will give me the strength. I don't care if society thinks I'm worthless or can't do anything or I'm too young or I'm too naive. Cast off every encumbrance. If you are that elephant with that rope tied around your ankle, I want to tell you this morning. You have the power to pull that stake out of the ground and do great things in your service for God. The question is, will you do that for Him?